I'm Brandi Crews, coming up today on Undivided. Well, if we had any doubt that Democrats in Olympia are going to try to close their budget deficit by raising taxes, legislative leaders just erased it for us. Plus, Jeff Bezos says he's optimistic about a second Trump administration, and U.S. students really suck at math and science, in case you didn't know already. That and more coming up today on Undivided. This holiday season, give the gift of common sense. Get a loved one who might need it. A subscription to Undivided, go to patreon.com/undivided/gift. It's common sense, the gift that keeps on giving. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Crews, our final live show of the week. I need a prop. One second. Let's see here. Nope, that's not it. Nope, that's not it. Oh, here it is. Oh, tinfoil hat on today. I need an actual tinfoil hat. Can you work on that, Nicole? Just a piece of tinfoil for me.
Oh, yeah, let's
do it.
Because
I need it often. I never start the show with my tinfoil hat conspiracy theories. I save them for the end of the show when the diehard subscribers are still watching and listening, because I know that you guys won't judge me. But I got to start at the top today. I usually never start the show with this stuff. This whole murder of the UnitedHealthcare CEO is wild to me. Nicole and I have been talking about it all morning. Something smells fishy. I have a lot of theories about it. In case you haven't heard about it, which I find very hard to believe. So this from CNBC, the UnitedHealthcare CEO, Brian Thompson, was fatally shot in a targeted attack. The gunman, at least to the best of my knowledge right now, is still at large. I'm not going to show you the shooting video because I don't want to be demonetized on YouTube, but this guy is like staying across the street. There's this conference, right? So he's the CEO of this healthcare company, which is super strange to me that he doesn't have security with him, like private security around the clock. But he's got this conference, early morning hours, Manhattan. He's staying at a hotel across the street and he's just walking. So maybe he felt like, look, I'm just walking across the block. Why do I need security with me to this conference, right? And you see him in the video and he's just strolling casually. It's still dark outside. There's a person around, like a lady drinking a coffee. There's a vehicle that's idling on the sidewalk. And this guy, we do have a still of it. He comes up, he's dressed all in black. He's got this backpack on. And he's got, I don't know a ton about firearms, so I'm not going to pretend I do, but he's got a gun that clearly appears to have a silencer sort of thing on it. And he shoots at him. You know, the gun seems to jam. He clears the jam, shoots again, clears the jam again, shoots again or whatever. And then he takes off, according to NYPD. He takes off on foot, and you can see that. And then he got onto an electric bike, went into Central Park, and they sort of lost him. So when this video first came out of this, of course, people are thinking it's clearly targeted because there's other people around. This guy comes out of the shadows and he executes this healthcare CEO, which is horrifying, in the early morning hours in Manhattan. So no doubt in my mind it's targeted, but a lot of people, because of, I guess, this shooter and the gun and how he's dressed and all of this and the fact that it's targeted, automatically are like, oh, it's a hit. It's like a paid hit. Now, I don't think it's a paid hit anymore, and I'll tell you why in a moment, but now, here's where things get just really weird to me. So one of the reasons I don't believe it's a paid hit is because this hitman is like caught on surveillance video with his mask down buying water, like before it happened, and then is caught on surveillance video afterwards. And also, I just don't think, first of all, I think if you're a trained hitman, like, are you going to show up and buy a bottle of water without your mask on? Like, and New York City, one of the most surveilled cities on the planet. No, I just don't think so. The other thing, and Nicole, can you remind me, if you can look it up, what the what was written on the shell casings? Forgot what it was, because that's the other reason. There were, on each of the shell casings, there were words written. And I'm sorry, if you're a trained hitman, you're in it for the money. You get a job. You know, I don't know a lot about, I watch a lot of Dateline. You get a job, you go out, you do the job. You're not going to take the time to write. What was it, Nicole?
It was deny, defend, depose.
Deny, defend, depose on right. The shell casings. or on the bullets. It was bullets or the shell casings, one of the two.
I believe it's the shell casings.
You're not going to do that. You're just going to collect the money and you're going to go. And no, you're not going to be on camera at a convenience store buying bottled water with your mask down. And I'm sorry, you're also not going to do it when there's a two witnesses on the street right in front of it. It just doesn't make sense to me. So I think this is sort of like a lone gunman who has some sort of vendetta. That's my thing. But Nicole, if you can bring back up that surveillance image, here's where I get my tinfoil hat thing on, right? And I hate to be all weird about it. A guy died. It's horrible. Those don't look like the same people to me. So NYPD released these two images of the suspected gunmen with their little thing down. That doesn't even look like the same person.
I don't know. This one is less different to me.
The one on the right looks like a chick and very slender of build. And honestly, you know what I see there? Breasts. don't they look a little more, and I know what breasts look like. I'll look at two of them every day when I wake up. Doesn't that look like that person has breasts?
I mean, I could see where you would get that. Yes.
That looks like a female or a very effeminate man. On the left, that's a very bulked out. Look at the nose. Look at how thick and defined and the facial hair. I get it.
Yeah. To me, I think it looks like just a different angle and perspective of a security camera, because you'll see the stuff behind him is all the same. Him or her, but but it's like a lighter image and then a angle and then smiling, so there's a lot of things that change in that. And I actually think the one on the left might be like stretched a little, but I don't know,
it looks weird. So now, okay, you found an explanation for that, you know, maybe it's grainy video or whatever. Explain this, Nicole, you're so smart. So they put out these surveillance images of the gunman and his backpack, which he was wearing during the shooting. And so it's like a gray backpack, very clear, very clearly a gray backpack. You also see that same gray backpack in the still of the shooting where he's got it on during the shooting. Now look at this. So they posted what they think it is, like a camera backpack, basically. So the type of backpack, they found it online. Why in one photo is the backpack black and in one surveillance image the backpack is gray? Riddle me that, Nicole.
Well, and I mean, the jacket looks different in these two photos.
So now maybe this is a different. Totally possibly shed all his stuff and picked up new stuff. Totally possible.
Yep.
And I could just really be living in conspiracy la-la land. It's just very strange.
It's very strange. But I mean, that looks like a different jacket for
sure. It does. So yeah, maybe he stripped all his stuff. And if you were a good...
Well, they said he stayed at some hostel. They think he stayed at a hostel the night before and then got up and...
They're totally going to find this guy.
I mean, it's a very clear picture. Anybody should be able to identify that person.
Also dropped his cell phone and a bottle of water, I think it was. So, I mean... They're going to find this guy and we're going to figure out, you know, I was horrified by, and this just speaks to our level of discourse. You remember Taylor Lorenz, the Wall Street Journal, was it Washington Post, a media reporter who's just wild. She like left her job and then now she's just on Blue Sky and doing stuff independent. She was talking about, I mean, it was just insane. Maybe I'll pull him for national later on. She was like, and people wonder why we want healthcare CEOs dead, and was talking about sharing this story with like bad coverage and totally justifying it. It's just horrible. I mean, whatever the guy did, however unhappy you might be with the healthcare system, nobody deserves to be executed in cold blood. It's just insane. But there's so much stuff about this that's wild. So anyway, I had to start the show with that because Nicole and I have just been talking about it all morning. And there's just things that I'll take my tinfoil hat off now because I don't need it for the next segment, because the next segment, it's not a conspiracy. I'm totally right.
Waiting for that Dateline episode.
Well, this will absolutely be a Dateline episode. Anyway, okay, let's get to Washington State news, because I know that's why you're here. Although I'm very curious to hear your guys' conspiracies as well. All right, so we have been talking about, obviously, the story of the legislative session will be not only Bob Ferguson and whatever kind of governor he decides to be, but the $10 to $12 billion budget deficit that we're just all of a sudden facing, and Inslee gets to leave office and stick the rest of us with it. And we've been saying that really there's only two options. It's the same options any sort of family has. Either you cut back on your spending or you have to make more money. So for a family, it might be you got to pick up more shifts or whatever it is to bring more money in if you want to maintain your current family's spending and level of spending. For the government, new money is just money they get from you. That's the only way the government gets money, is by taking more money from you. So for Democrats in Olympia, the question is, do you cut bloat from the budget, which we know there is plenty of bloat, or do you come to all of us and say, hey, we're incapable of sticking to a budget, we're incapable of managing our spending, and so now we're going to take more money from all of you. And just to give you an idea of, well, first, they made it crystal clear what they're going to do. So now it's not even a guess. Don't even have to guess anymore. Drew Mickelson over at King 5 News sat down with the Speaker of the House and the Senate Majority Leader, both Democrats, the two highest ranking Democrats in Olympia, for an interview. They had very festive Christmas sweaters on, I'll say. But they made it very clear what their plan is to deal with the $10 to $12 billion budget deficit.
These legislative leaders say they are confident voters would support raising new taxes to bridge the budget gap.
The voters gave us clues about where we should do that. We should be taxing rich people and companies that can afford to pay more and that fairly should be paying more to support the services that we all benefit from as a community.
There will be an argument that that was a mandate on the past, but you're saying, hey, that's a sign that we should continue on this direction.
Absolutely.
What did I tell you? What did I tell you they would do? And what did Jamie Peterson, Senator Jamie Peterson, he spells it out there very clearly. They're going to decrease, they're going to expand the tax on capital gains. They're going to expand the tax on capital gains to include more people who aren't just the 2% of the uber wealthy. And they are going to try to push through what amounts to a head tax, a tax on high paying jobs. That was something that Representative Drew Stokesbury, the House Minority Leader, brought up with us when he was on the other day talking about what he's been hearing Democrats are floating. So remember, Seattle passed. First, they tried a head tax. They ended up repealing it on their own. And then they passed in the middle of the summer in 2020, while everyone was focused, understandably so, on what was happening up at the occupied protest zone, they pushed through, because they thought the political environment would allow for it to happen unscathed, a tax on high-paying jobs, which meant for businesses that pay their employees over a certain amount, they're taxed for the, I guess, privilege of having employees who they pay a living wage. You know, they love that phrase. It's like, hey, you need to pay your employees a living wage. Hey, you're paying your employees too much money, so we're going to tax you for paying your employees too much money. The progressive left has utterly lost its mind. So that's what they're going to do. That's what they're going to do, because they believe they need even more money than they already have. And they think that because voters decided not to repeal the tax on capital gains when they had an opportunity to in November, that they have a mandate to expand it. That they have a mandate. I told everybody this is what was going to happen. I mean, this is, I'm going to go roll tape. You guys know this, that this is a justification for them to expand the tax on capital gains, to bring in even more money, to fund programs that aren't working, to fund programs that line the pockets of their cronies and their allies, as they have had in so many other things, like the homeless industrial complex, like they have in the climate industrial complex. And just to, again, remind you, because we talked about it on the show earlier this week, First of all, we know that more money, them bringing in more money and creating new taxes or expanding taxes, is not going to fix their budget problem. How do we know that? Well, because bringing in new taxes has never fixed their budget problem. Because since 2013, this we talked about on the show earlier this week, this from the Center Square, the state operating budget has increased, again, just in the last 10 years, from $38.4 billion to $75.5 billion. So they've doubled their budget and their spending in 10 years, and we still have a $10 billion budget deficit. So if taxes were a way to avoid a budget deficit, don't you think we would not be in a budget deficit right now? No, because it's not about needing new revenue. It's about being able to simply manage a budget and spending. Over that time frame, since 2013, these are just a few of the new tax revenues that they've brought in. The carbon tax through the Climate Commitment Act, which is hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars a year. The capital gains tax, hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars a year in new revenue. The long-term care tax. Legal weed. I mean, what the hell is going on with that tax money? I thought that was going to be a windfall for our state. Vaping products tax, an increase in the hazardous waste tax, an increase in the B&O surcharge for higher education. Those are just a few. But those first three, those account for hundreds of millions of dollars in additional revenue to our state in just the last year and a half to 2 years. And they still find themselves in a massive budget deficit. And now they're saying, oh, new taxes will fix this problem. No, because all you're going to do is expand the size of government with new taxes. You're not going to cut anything. You're not going to learn your lesson at all from the last 10 years. We know in our state, more money has never solved a problem, because we wouldn't have all the problems we have. I don't know what it's going to take for people to wake up to this. It's very clear. I mean, this isn't even my opinion. More money has clearly not solved any problem. More taxes have clearly not solved any problem. Not on the environment, the Climate Commitment Act, and all the climate initiatives that we have that are costing working class people a ton of money. Our climate outcomes are worse than when Governor Inslee took office. Less recycling, more carbon emissions. He hasn't fixed anything. It's a total grift that has made his friends and allies very, very wealthy. And he's going to land a seven-figure job in the climate sector. I told you that. Within months of leaving office, he will land a seven-figure job in the climate sector that is a result of all the climate policies he pushed on all of us. Again, none of this is opinion when I say that all these increased taxes that they convinced you to push through because, oh, this is the right thing to do, have actually solved any of the problems that they say they're going to solve. Homelessness. How much money are we spent with billions on homelessness? Only have a worse homeless crisis. I'm a broken record. Because it's insane to me that people don't catch on to that. That it is such a grift. I mean, where in the private sector would any of this happen? Because they can't just manufacture money in the private sector. The government can. Well, one, the federal government can print money. But when our state government needs more money, they just increase taxes. They don't budget. They don't cut. They don't lay off like the private sector does. So this is insane. So they have said, can you play, Nicole, the cut from Senator Jamie Peterson one more time?
These legislative leaders say they are confident voters would support raising new taxes to bridge the budget gap.
The voters gave us clues about where we should do that. We should be taxing rich people.
No,
and
you
companies
should
that
be
can
cutting
to pay
spending.
More and that fairly should be paying more. To support the
Holy
services
smokes.
That we all benefit from as a community.
There will be an argument that that was
how tone deaf
a mandate on the past, but you're saying, hey, that's a sign that we should continue on this direction.
Absolutely.
And so tone deaf in the sense that, so they're going to tax rich people more. They already have the capital gains tax. They're going to tax them more. And then they're going to tax businesses. For the privilege of being successful businesses in the state of Washington, we already have one of the worst business environments in the entire country. Remember the numbers we showed you from a progressive institute before the election. This progressive institute was pushing out these numbers, hoping to disprove the narrative from the Trump administration that Kamala Harris was bad for the economy. And the numbers that they showed across the country, 85% of counties were seeing an increase in new businesses. And the progressives were like, see, Kamala Harris and Joe Biden aren't bad for the economy, except at the same time, they proved my point here in Washington State, because Washington State was red. It was an outlier. It was one of the only states in the nation that was not seeing business growth. And that's from progressives, because they wanted everything. They were like looking at it at a national scale, but for us, it looked terrible. We had seen a significant drop in the number of new businesses. That's because it's not advantageous to have a business here. And you saw, just as one example, if the route that they're going to go in Olympia is to pass a tax on high-paying jobs across the entire state, they need only to look at what happened in Seattle when they did that, because it was just meant to be a tax on Amazon, right? What did Amazon do? They didn't even fight back against it. They took 10,000 jobs and they moved them over to Bellevue. That's what they did. But now, that's not enough, right? They were able to move the jobs out of Seattle into Bellevue and invest in all this new growth in Bellevue, new buildings, new jobs, helping Bellevue with new infrastructure. So they escaped the tax on high-paying jobs from Seattle. But now if they do it at the state level, those jobs in Bellevue that they took out of Seattle for that very reason will be subject to the same tax they tried to avoid in Seattle. So what will they do? Okay, we got out of Seattle, that saved us. But now it's a statewide tax. Now we get out of the state. You do not have to be a rocket scientist to understand that. That's what history has shown us, very recent history. So you think that our state will be more successful if the most successful businesses leave it? How dumb do you have to be to believe that? Punishing success, punishing entrepreneurs, punishing business growth. And you think that that's going to help our economic outlook? You think if businesses like Amazon leave, that that's going to help your budget crunch? You know how much money they bring into the state every single year? I can't believe this is the leader of the Senate in Washington State. who thinks that that is the key to get us out of a budget crunch that their misspending got us into. And I keep going back to because it's just the perfect example. In this state, we are putting out government contracts to provide laser hair removal to transgender inmates. Until that's not a line item, like, you don't get any more money. We shouldn't be giving you another dime. We have so much waste in this state. Governor Inslee's right-of-way initiative, spending $500,000 to $1 million per person to get them out of a state right-of-way and out of homelessness. We have a spending problem. You guys know that. I know some days I'm preaching to the choir with all of you. The question is, how are we going to get more people to understand that? But by all means, raise taxes. By all means, raise taxes. That's to the point I'm at. We could spend the next few months, like we did last legislative session, on the steps of the Capitol, holding rallies, fighting back. I mean, how many rallies did we do last year to try to get the fix for police pursuits in the year before? And we did, like, that was eventually successful via the initiative. And even before the initiative, we were able to, I think, move the needle on getting them to roll back police pursuits a little bit. And that's because that's a life or death situation. It's a life or death situation for people on our streets. It was a life and death situation for law enforcement and for our communities. But with this stuff, taxes aren't life and death. I think we let them bury themselves. I think we let them send big new business taxes to the desk of the new governor, Bob Ferguson. I say we let them send that bill that would make homelessness a protected class over to Bob Ferguson. And I think we let them bury themselves 6 feet deep in bad policy in his first term in office. That's where I'm at. Rather than go down to Olympia and fight and speak and all of these things. That's where I'm at, because this stuff is so utterly stupid that I really think we have to hit rock, San Francisco depths of despair before it's fixed. So I'd rather just let it happen. I'd rather get there sooner rather than later. And I really hate to say that. Now, I do want to give credit to one Democrat today. Preemptive applause. Nicole's always like, Brandy, I don't want to applaud. So we talked on the show yesterday about these journalism fellows. State-funded media has come to Washington State, being paid for with your tax money, who are now going to be covering the legislative session. Just a reminder, this was from the Linwood Times. Three Murrow News fellows will be sent to Olympia to cover the 2025 state legislative session. The fellows, whose salaries are financed through a $2.4 million apportionment in state funds, will be responsible to hold state politicians up to scrutiny. And I talked on the show yesterday about how I just disagree with the notion that it is the government's responsibility to fund media. I mean, that, again, I always give the exception to public access. If the government is funding channels where you can watch what the government is doing, I think that's very, very important. That's totally different. The government shouldn't be funding media. It is totally contrary to a free press. And if the media is failing, then the media is failing for a reason. And it's not the job of taxpayers to prop them up. If taxpayers want to prop the media up, they can do it themselves by subscribing to a media outlet. If they want to prop the Seattle Times up, they can pay to get the paper. If they want to prop up Undivided, you can pay us $5 a month for a subscription. That's the free market. And I think if you're not putting out a product that's giving people what they need, then yeah, you're going to fail. That's just business. Why should the government prop up any business, any sector individually? So apparently there's some agreement there from a Democrat right after our show yesterday. I don't know if it was tied to our show, but Rep. Mari Levitt, a Democrat in the 28th Legislative District, she sent this out on X. I'm a great advocate of local journalism. I miss my daily paper in times of old, want strong journalism outlets in WA, yet not on board for state-funded fellows, programs, and positions at WSU, especially given our serious budget crunch. Finding government efficiencies is crucial. We like that. I mean, that's just common sense. First of all, not on board, because that just doesn't make sense. But if not for any other reason, for the budgetary reason. Hey, we've got $10 billion we got to cut. I mean, we should cut that they're just going to raise taxes for. But this is one I'd be fine with getting rid of. A few million dollars here and there will make all the difference. So I appreciate Representative Levitt making her opinion on the matter known on social media yesterday. All right. So talking about this environment between big business and Democrats and blue states, et cetera, you know, I've ranted about Amazon on this show. Now, I think Amazon is a good corporate citizen. I think Amazon brings a lot to the state and is underappreciated for what it brings to the state and unfairly vilified. And I've said that for years. The amount of vilification of Amazon is unhinged. I go back and I think of the interview I did when I was still on Fox 13 with Lorena Gonzalez when she was running for mayor against Bruce Harrell. Thank God she didn't win. I did an interview with her and I asked her if she thought Amazon was a net good for the city of Seattle. She said no. Isn't that terrifying? And at the time she was on the Seattle City Council and she said she didn't think Amazon was a net good for the city of Seattle. I was like, wow, this is just, I don't even know what to say about that. So I think Amazon is good for the city, but I think Amazon, among other businesses, has tried to pander to the far left in the hopes that the far left will sort of get off their back. And as I said on the show the other day, I don't think that's ever going to happen. So you should just do business in the way that you want to do business. And if they yell and scream and protest, like, so be it. Who cares? You're a massive corporation. If you have the money and the ability to leave Washington State, if you want to leave Washington State, I wouldn't blame Amazon one bit. But, you know, so again, I think that Amazon has not embraced conservative policies publicly. Policies that would be better for their business because they don't want to be seen embracing conservative policies. So it's like, oh no, we're still, you know, climate pledge and all these things. We're going to donate $1 million to help keep the Climate Commitment Act and all this because they want to placate the far left. It's time they just abandon that. And for a lot of businesses, you could choose. And look, as every business gets to decide between the bottom line, their money, and maybe who they want to be, their morality, and what they want to stand for as a business. And so if that's the choice you make to say, well, no, we're progressives through and through, that's what we stand for, and then your business suffers as a result, like that's a choice you make, right? But it's interesting because Jeff Bezos, he was at a New York Times book deal summit, deal book summit, and he was asked about the incoming Trump administration. And I have to say, I was kind of surprised by the candor in his response.
You know, if we're talking about Trump, I think it's very interesting. I'm actually very optimistic this time around that we're going to see. I'm very hopeful about this. He seems to have a lot of energy around reducing regulation. And my point of view, if I can help him do that, I'm going to help him because we do have too much regulation in this country. This country is so set up.
Right.
To grow. By the way, all of our problems, all of our economic problems, like if you look at the deficit and, I mean, you know, the debt, the national debt, and how gigantic it is as a portion of GDP, these are real problems and they're real long-term problems. And the way you get out of them is by outgrowing them. You're going to solve the problem of the national debt by making it a smaller percentage of GDP. Not by shrinking the national debt, but by growing the GDP. You have to grow the denominator. We are the luckiest country in the world. We have all these natural resources, including energy independence. We have the best risk capital system in the world, by far. There's so many advantages here, but we are burdened by excessive permitting right. And regulation. You can't build a bridge and all these things. You know what they are. We see these examples all the time. We need to be able to build solar fields
But so you're optimistic.
I'm super optimistic.
About this president. And the reason I ask
I'm
is because...
I'm very optimistic that President Trump is serious about this regulatory agenda. Right. And I think he's going to... I think he has a good chance of succeeding.
Yeah. And we should want him to succeed. And businesses should want him to succeed. And I like that Jeff Bezos, you know, because he's been criticized. Obviously, he owns the Washington Post, and the Washington Post has been fairly, very biased towards Democrats. But then they came out and said, you know, we're not going to endorse a presidential candidate. I don't know if Jeff Bezos, I mean, I think Jeff Bezos had, because he wrote an op-ed in his own newspaper after that, basically saying they wanted to go back to not doing that as they had done historically. But I liked hearing Jeff Bezos say that. And I wish there are more heads of businesses, and I realize he's not the CEO of Amazon anymore, but I wish there were more heads of businesses who would be willing to come out and sort of, you know, reject this othering that happens when you support Republicans or conservative policies or Donald Trump's policies in blue states. Like in our state, if the head of a company came out, I mean, they would be attacked. If they came out and said something like that, they would be attacked for it, but they have to just not care. And if more of them do that and just not care and say, yeah, we have to get rid of the regulation, we have to do this, we're not going to support increased taxes, even for things like the climate that we support, because that would be supporting a tax and spend environment that is ultimately bad for business. There are so many people who believe that, but they just do not have the courage, or they're so overly concerned about coming out and saying it. And that is what it's going to take to turn things around. And I don't know, you know, who's going to be willing to do it, but we need to see more of that from the business community. He also, by the way, weighed in on Elon Musk, since Elon Musk is, like, you know, going to be part of the government essentially with Doge. And, you know, they've got, he's got Blue Origin, and what is Elon Musk's SpaceX, you know, if there's competition here, is he going to try to unfairly, like, tilt things in his favor? So anyway, Bezos commented on that.
I've had a lot of success in life not being cynical. And I've very rarely been taken advantage of as a result. It's happened a couple of times, but not very often. And I think that cynicism, you know, why be cynical about that? Let's go into it hoping that the statements that have been made are correct, that this is going to be done, you know, above board in the public interest. And if that turns out to be naive, well, then we'll see. But I actually think it's going to be great. I'm hoping.
I love it. I love the positivity. Let's go there. Let's all be on board trying to fix things and not assume the worst of people, all of this. So especially with, you know, something like Doge, which there's not a track record there. Like, look, if someone has a track record of, you know, failing, not doing what they're saying they're going to do or whatever it is, or a government program, that's different. You scrutinize that on the way in, or a politician. But Doge is brand new. So who knows what's going to happen? Let's see what happens. And if it doesn't work out, if they're not doing what they say they're going to do, if Elon Musk is trying to influence things to benefit his company, then that's a problem. And we need to call it out as it happens. So I like those comments from Jeff Bezos. I wish he had said comments like that when he was actually the head of Amazon and been a little more outspoken. And I wish Seattle businesses would do the same. All right. In our segment, Unbelievable, we haven't talked about education in a while. So we've got an education story that might not surprise you, but it's important to talk about. Anyway, first, I'm trying to think about how I convince people to get on a new weight loss journey between Thanksgiving and Christmas.
Well, you're allowed a cheat day, right? That could be Christmas Day.
Well, I don't know about that. So I always convince people. So I lost 40 pounds on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic program. And I literally did it at the most difficult time that you can try to lose weight. I started on November 1st and I ended like January 1st for my first 60 days of the program. And I lost 30 pounds. So I did it during the most difficult time that you could start a new weight loss journey. And the reason is because I saw that picture of me that I'm showing on the left. And I asked Nicole, I said, do I look like that? And she kind of looked at me with sadness in her eyes, like, yes, you do. And I was like, that's unacceptable. I cannot live like two more months of my life like that. So I'm just going to do it now, because I put on 40 pounds in a year, 40 pounds in a year. And then I looked at photos of myself. I was like, holy smokes. Looks aren't everything, but it really bothered me. And I didn't feel good either. I was tired all the time and had no energy to go out and do anything. I embarked on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic program because I was like, there's never going to be a good time to do this. There's always going to be another holiday. There's always going to be a vacation, some sort of get together. And so I did it and I committed to it and I buckled down, and the results speak for themselves. So if you kind of feel the way I felt, like, oh my gosh, at some point I got to do this, just schedule a free 15-minute consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team. There's no obligation. You can call and talk to him about the program and whether it would work for you, because not every weight loss program is for every person. So EastsideWeightLossClinic.com, EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. Schedule your consultation today, totally free. And we can make America healthy again, one person at a time. All right. U.S. students really, really suck at math and science, while students in other areas of the world are succeeding. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. This is totally intentional. Other areas of the world and our enemies are trying to erode us from within. And they're getting us to focus on these culture wars, extreme gender ideology, all these dumb things. Well, they're over there and they're teaching their young people how to fight. They're teaching their young people to be smart, to be entrepreneurs, to lead in all these areas. And America is just declining. And now the New York Times, at least, is willing to acknowledge it. This headline from the New York Times: U.S. students posted dire math declines on an international test. On the test, American fourth and eighth graders posted results similar to scores from 1995. Like, that's when we still were relying on calculators. Maybe that's a good thing. Maybe we've made it too easy for kids. And they're like,
but with all that technology, you should be going way
up. Right, 100%. Let me see. It was a sign of notable stagnation, even as other countries saw improvements. Since 2019, American fourth graders have declined 18 points in math, while eighth graders have declined 27 points. And in case you're like, well, the pandemic, which was a worldwide pandemic, that happened in other countries too. In 16 other countries, fourth graders performed better in math in 2023 than 2019. Among American eighth graders, both high performing and low performing students lost ground in math. So then you can't, what that tells me, and I love that detail, because you can't blame it on like poverty, for instance, right? Like, oh, these are kids who they didn't have internet access at home or whatever it is. They've been low performing, or we're not investing as much in kids who have educational needs. No, high performing and low performing still lost ground. And again, you can't blame it on the pandemic either, because how could other nations figure it out when they were also dealing with the pandemic? We just are focused completely on other things. Let's see, also from the New York Times. Overall, American students' performance in math was similar to their performance in 1995 when this test was first given. The top performing education systems in math included Singapore, Taipei, Taiwan, South Korea, Hong Kong, and Japan. Several European countries also significantly outperformed the United States, including Britain, Poland, and Ireland. Yeah, so nationally, our students are not doing well. And there's no excuse for it. We live in one of the most, if not the most, opportunity-driven country on the planet. We have endless resources. We have endless government handouts for resources. We have exceptional technology. And we have all these other nations that are outperforming us. And it's not necessarily a surprise, because we already knew that math scores, and science, frankly, but math scores in Washington State were horrible. We've been talking about this for some time. And so now you're just seeing nationally that there is also a problem with math and science and other things. Although Washington State is really near the bottom of the list when it comes to educational outcomes. This was a story that we talked about in June from the Washington State Standard. 72% of Washington eighth graders are not proficient in math. 72% not proficient in math in eighth grade. And we let our superintendent of public instruction keep his job in November for a third term. And across the board, test scores aren't great. I show this graphic whenever I can. Yeah, right now, 67.2% of students regularly attend class. That's horrible. This is the most recent one? You went on and repolled it?
No. This is the one that we used a few weeks ago. We only used it like a month ago. So I don't think there's anything more recent than 2023 scores.
We'll have to see. But this is, I mean, it's not going to change significantly. 50% meet ELA standards, 39% math standards, 43% science standards. I mean, we know that outcomes have been declining, graduation rates have been... What's interesting is when you have, like, test scores failing so much, and then, like, graduation rates aren't changing as much. It's like, that's because they're just letting kids through. Mm-hmm. And then that has outcomes for them in higher education. Because it's like, no one can fail, everyone can pass, no one who shows up can get a failing grade. We're going to teach you about extreme gender ideology and push all these things about race on you for years and years and years, and then be utterly shocked when test scores are in the toilet. And that's why you should watch our documentary, Operation Indoctrination.
Oh, yes.
You can watch it for free on any social media platform, and you can see why our test scores are as bad as they are.
I was just going to say, you know, this is a good, during the pandemic, I think it was the WIAA president, Mick Hoffman, I think, is who said it, but he said, if all the children are behind, because he was talking about Washington specifically, but he was like, well, if everybody's behind, then nobody's behind. But like, you compare it to a global
they
level,
are behind.
They're very behind. And I also think it's interesting because it's probably tells you how they spent their COVID, because you could spend your COVID staying educated, staying up to date. And I mean, there were opportunities. We know that that didn't work out so well as far as Zoom class and all of that. But again, people trying to get rid of these the high cap programs or whatever,
because
the Asian community is very good about taking education seriously and
it's
making
offensive
sure their kids
for the
are,
Asian American community to succeed.
Right.
Like, so all the other, just like, that's totally true, right?
Mm-hmm.
All the other different skin tones, right? You're like, oh, we need to make sure that we're like lifting them up, even if we have to do it artificially, right?
Right.
Oh, but like Asians, we've got to put them down, right? So it's like, it's weird how they single out Asians. And like Asians aren't included in the DEI. Asians aren't included in any of that. It's like, no, it's like we got to shove them down. And then like if you're a black student, you're underperforming, like we're going to make sure you don't fail. How about you work to get them up to the standard right. that Asian American students are setting? And frankly, white students, I think Asian American outcomes are above even white students in some areas.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's like, let's lift.
Well, I'm sure they are.
Here's a crazy idea. Let's lift everyone up.
Well,
let's get them not artificially. Let's get them up to those. Let's use how the Asian American students are performing as a standard that we should all work to achieve.
Right.
Can't have that.
Right. That's so there's stupid. Cultural differences there.
Oh my
and
God.
One seems to be working, the others aren't. And so let's say, you know, let's instill some of those values.
That culturally, maybe what's going on there?
Right. They're instilling these values and, you know, I guess expectations of their children.
100%.
And we're not. We're like, well, you don't have to go to school today.
Yeah, no.
I know. Take a mental health day.
Take a mental health day. Oh, you can go. We brought in, what did they do after Trump won? We brought in kittens that you can pet if you really are really depressed. Yeah, you're really mm-hmm. teaching them to compete with our enemies abroad. And I did look up our latest report card. It's similar, but the amount per pupil has actually gone up. So we're spending, and we know that, like our education budget has doubled, but it's right now students on track for college level learning, 50% in ELA, 39% in math, 44% in science, and then the students attending 90% or more of school days, 69.7%. It's just insane, with an 83% graduation rate. And then we have Chris Reichdahl, who gets to have a third term after utterly destroying our state's education system. Go watch Operation Indoctrination. Go watch Operation Indoctrination. We're working on some follow-ups to it, but it tells you exactly why our state's school system is in disarray and why more and more parents are making the difficult decision to pull their kids and either homeschool them or pay the cost of private education. We need meaningful school choice now if we want to save the future generation and put them on a track for success where we can compete as a country with other nations, especially with our enemies. All right, we'll get to national news. Why are you muting me? Why, you want me to shut up?
Sorry, I meant to mute me, and I accidentally muted you real quick.
You have a problem with me?
Nope.
Sure?
Trigger happy here.
Okay, trigger happy. She's like, that's enough from you, Brandy. All right, the First Mark Challenge. I got a new message about this, and I get a couple messages a week from people who have taken the First Mark Challenge, and the narrative is always very consistent. It's like, I can't believe I waited so long to do that. So Beth told me, Brandy, I listen to First Mark commercials every day, and I have for years. Well, last week I reached out to them. Our annual premiums are going down now more than $4,000. I can't believe I waited so long. Three homes, three cars went from $10,800 to $6,700. Thank you. Yeah, I saved Beth $4,000. Well, I didn't, but by talking about First Mark, $4,000 a year, you guys. And that is not an abnormal story where people take the First Mark Challenge and they're saving hundreds or thousands of dollars a year. Like, who cannot use an extra few thousand dollars a year to go toward other things other than insurance? So again, I always say it's a no-brainer because it truly is. First Mark Insurance costs you nothing. You never pay them anything for their services, and you don't pay them anything to take the First Mark Challenge. So take the First Mark Challenge today, and you might be the next person sending me your First Mark success story. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you. All right. So the U.S. Supreme Court hearing on this case out of Tennessee that involves whether Tennessee can ban transgender care for youth continues. And it's just, I mean, some of the arguments have been fascinating. We played a clip from the ACLU yesterday where the attorney for the ACLU had to acknowledge that there is absolutely no evidence to prove one of their key talking points, that not giving kids access to these surgeries will make them more likely to commit suicide, because that's not true. There's no evidence to back that up. They use that hoping you'll shut up and you won't keep pushing back against this. So if anybody ever brings that up to you, ask them to show you the data, because there isn't data, and the ACLU attorney had to admit it in front of the highest court in the land yesterday. So now that brings us to Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson, who I thought I'd heard everything. I thought I'd heard everything. And look, this is the woman who can't define what a woman is. Remember during her hearings for her confirmation, she was asked if she could define a woman. And she said something like, well, I don't have a degree in biology, so I can't do that. So maybe this shouldn't come as any surprise. But talking about, so she's making a comparison with denying sex changes for children to denying interracial marriage. Listen,
You know, as I read the statute here, the case here, the court starts off by saying that Virginia is now one of 16 states which prohibit and punish marriages on the basis of racial classifications. And when you look at the structure of that law, it looks in terms of, you can't do something that is inconsistent with your own characteristics. It's sort of the same thing. So it's interesting to me that we now have this different argument, and I wonder whether Virginia could have gotten away with what they did here by just making a classification argument the way that Tennessee is in this case.
So to dumb that down for you, she's bringing up 1976 Loving v. Virginia, which had to do with interracial marriage, and basically saying that that's similar to this current case where Tennessee is kind of excluding a category of people or a specific thing. Like, you can't have this type of care for these kinds of people. She says that not giving sex changes to minors has similar characteristics to what Virginia was doing back in the 1960s by not allowing interracial marriage. Like cutting off the breasts of a 9-year-old and not allowing doctors to do that. She thinks there's innate similarities between what Virginia was doing back in the 1960s with not allowing interracial marriage. Yeah, that tells you everything you need to know about Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson. It's just insane the way that some of these people think. And I don't know if it's driven by like indoctrination over a long period of time where people are just made to believe that, like, again, these kids will kill themselves. It'll just be these horrible outcomes because there's no scientific basis for it. So it's all in the heart, right? There's no brain basis for doing this to children. It's all like, but this will make them feel good. Yeah, for maybe 6 months, and then they'll grow up and then they have no breasts or whatever it is and they can't ever have children, and you just care about the implications right now and it makes you feel good and you think it's progressive. I just don't understand the people who continue to argue that it makes sense for kids to undergo life-changing alterations with their gender. And it's the same people who argue that, oh, you can't put a juvenile in prison for the rest of their life because their brain isn't fully formed. Like, you can't even consent to sex as a minor, right? I don't think you can consent to sex as a minor.
Well, I know, definitely not. I thought there was an age.
There's some sort of age.
So if you can't consent to someone as an adult.
But you can't consent, but you can consent to change your sex. Mm. It's just it's the strangest thing. It makes no sense. We have to get past this. Hopefully, I think the SCOTUS case will land in the favor of what happened in Tennessee, and maybe it'll start to turn the tide for these sorts of laws across the country. But this is a justice. This is a Supreme Court justice who genuinely thinks denying a child who wants to change their gender surgically is the same as denying the ability of a white person to marry a black person. That's insane stuff. All right, let's see. Speaking of insane stuff in Washington State, always nice to get a little breath of sanity in our weekly segment, Florida Report.
It's not even controversial anymore. People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Miranda, hello there.
Hello, how are you?
Your hair is getting so long, the ends of it don't even show on camera anymore.
I know. I've been using some of that viral TikTok hair stuff, and it's actually working really well. So if it keeps working, maybe you can get them to sponsor your show.
You want to know what the viral TikTok hair stuff is?
It's called like Mary Ruth's.
Okay. I don't know.
And it's like, it's a syrup and you drink it and it works.
Whale semen?
It works.
When you digest it? You don't put it on your hair, you digest it?
You digest it. I was using castor oil for a while, but then it makes your hair all greasy and stuff. So I tried... it's basically like a hair, skin, and nails that you would take in like pill form, but it's liquid.
I'm sure our male listeners love this. Although, you know, men lose hair. Men want to regrow their hair. That's fine. And look at us. Look at, we have beautiful hair. I just was telling Nicole that I was having a good hair day. But anyway, we have stuff to discuss. So Ron DeSantis, maybe, for defense secretary. Obviously, Pete Hegseth is going through, you know, some questions about his past with women or whatever, and I don't know what of that is true or not true, but we'll see if he's able to get confirmed. Florida loves their Ron DeSantis, so I can't imagine that they'd be too happy if he left.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, they were giving him a lot of flack when he was running for president, and then as soon as he comes back, we love him again. So I'm not sure how much people down here are going to like him, you know, growing in his political career, but I think that's the whole point, is always trying to like move up to the next step. And it could be a good way for him to like make a little bit more of a national reputation for himself if he decides to run again in 2028.
Yeah, and he's a former military man. The thing that I guess I just see it as not a step up. Is that totally off base for me to say that going from the governor of Florida to the Secretary of Defense, maybe a kind of a lateral, but I mean, yeah. He was running for president. Then he's like, is he going to settle for, I hate to say settle, but for defense secretary? Probably.
I think it just puts his name in a national conversation more than just tied to Florida all the time.
Yeah.
So I think that it just, maybe it's a lateral step, but I think it's a step to get his opinions out there and his talk about him in a more national way than just a Florida way.
Well, and he's term limited out anyway. And so yeah. It's about, you know, who's going to run for a seat. So it's not like he's cutting things terribly short. And then Florida law is the lieutenant governor would take over for him in the meantime. In Florida, so it's not the same way here. The governor and lieutenant governor run on separate tickets. It's like a totally different thing, but they've run on the same ticket in Florida, right?
Yeah, for the past two election sessions, they've ran together. And she's a Miami native. She's a Cuban American. She's super involved in all types of different things, from the Department of Health to our space program down here. I think she's also involved in like cybersecurity down here. So I think it'd be interesting to know more about her before DeSantis decides to leave her in charge of everything. Yeah. But she's had quite a long political reputation down here, and there's a reason that he chose her. So
right. If he's been her lieutenant governor, like, again, here, it's a totally separate thing. You run your own campaign. You're your own kind of person, so to speak. So that sounds like, and she wouldn't be the governor very long unless she chose to run and won down there. But a lot of potential shifts in Florida. It's very interesting to watch all this happen. So, all right, let's do some more interesting, fun things, not politics related today, shall we? Okay. There is a house for sale. It's property for sale in Florida. It is the most expensive property currently for sale in the United States. It's selling for $295 million, but there's a problem.
Yeah, there's a problem. There's a problem with most real estate in Miami. It is all subject to the effects of climate change, which is the ocean coming for us. This particular property is surrounded by water on three sides, and it probably only sits about 5 feet above sea level. So it's not going to take much for that property to be put in a really precarious position.
And you can't, I mean, it's just like on a little peninsula. It's not like you can do much. You can't take this massive mansion and put it on stilts. I mean, I suppose you could, but this is something even Ron DeSantis has acknowledged. You know, when we talk about the ocean rising, like, that is a reality. I mean, it's happening very slowly, but would you spend $295 million on a property that in 20 years might be underwater?
Well, I do see that they have prepared in a different way. This particular property has a yacht berth. So I suppose if you are a billionaire, you just ride your yacht up in there and climb on board when the sea comes for you and you join the sea. So I think that they're going to be just fine, but the property, not so much.
Either way, they're going to be just fine. If you have a $295 million property, I feel like you probably have houses somewhere else as well. So it's just me. all right, one more. Godzilla the alligator is all over social media. Why?
Because it was caught swimming with a giant Burmese python in its mouth on Thanksgiving Day.
The thing of nightmares. This python, what was the movie about a giant ass snake in the jungle?
Anaconda.
Anaconda. This is like the anaconda. Yeah, this thing is huge.
It's huge. The tour guide that spotted this thing and took the video, she said that the gator itself looks to be like 10 to 12 feet long, and the python looks double that length.
If not more. And he's a fatty. He's got some, he's got some little deer in there or something.
Yeah, holy, probably another alligator.
Smokes. That's disgusting. Like, I'm never going to Florida again, honestly. That is absolutely grotesque. I mean, I love that it's on Thanksgiving, though. He's bringing his family a little Thanksgiving meal.
Yeah, I don't even think he's going to share it. I think he's just going to go ahead and eat it as a little snack for himself.
Oh my God, that's gross. Yeah, that's like big spiders and big snakes. No, I guess I'm never coming to see you again. So, all right, but we had to meet somewhere with more neutral territory where there aren't like gross, crawly things. Sorry. All right, Miranda, we appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
You too. Bye.
It's not even controversial anymore. People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Meow. I mean, that's disgusting. That is absolutely disgusting. And it was a big, fat, full python, too. Blech. Like, oh my gosh, I've been kayaking out there in the Glades. Never again. Never again. Absolutely not. That's disgusting. All right. If you're thinking about selling your home, Wes was, I got a chance to catch up with him because we hadn't talked to him in a while about the housing market. And he was like not mincing words in, you know, people are really staying in their homes and they're hunkering down. And the interest rate has a lot to do with that.
They're projecting 3.9 million home sales, residential units nationwide. And that's lower than any year during the Great Recession. So it really feels like anything is going to be better than what we had this year. So, you know, I'm hearing a lot of things. People are like, oh, gosh, well, you know, there might be a recession coming up. I'm like, hey, guys, anybody working in real estate has been living it for like the last 30 months or so. It's a strange conundrum, though, because sales are low, but prices are still very, very high. You can still sell and you can plan on making a lot of money, but you might have to prepare your home a little bit harder and do a little bit more work than you have in the past because buyers are a little bit, you know, less forgiving.
Yeah. And so in that case, obviously, you need to make sure you have a real estate agent who knows the position on the market. Wes has been through a lot of ups and downs in the market. He knows how, you know, depending on where your neighborhood is, how home sales have gone there and what you need to do. They have something called the Listing Boost Concierge Service, where if you just need that extra something to get your house to stand out, they can come in, they can manage some projects and some cosmetic upgrades. They can even help you pay for it up front, which is pretty cool. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, let's get to our daily subscriber show poll, which is in reference to something Miranda and I just talked about. So there's these rumblings that maybe Pete Hegseth, with everything going on with him, that if his confirmation does go well, that it might be Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida, who is tapped to be defense secretary. So I asked subscribers on Patreon, Locals, and X, who would you prefer to be the U.S. Secretary of Defense? Pete Hegseth, Ron DeSantis, or someone else? Nicole, do you have a strong opinion?
I don't really have a strong opinion on this. I like DeSantis, so I would be cool with either choice.
You know, I don't have a strong opinion either.
No.
No, I tend to... I think
Pete's getting... beat up for silly reasons. And I don't believe him.
And I don't like to see that happen. So you kind of want to. We'll start on Locals. CN DeVos said, I like Ron DeSantis, but he's a lawyer politician. Pete is a warrior, and I feel that's what is needed as SecDef. Politicians in that position are why the Pentagon is such a mess. Lake Dad says, I think Ron DeSantis serves much better as the governor of Florida, which again, he's going to be term limited out soon. So he's out of that position soon anyway. Bloom Kitty, I don't mind Hegseth, and the automatic character assassination maneuvers are getting old. He could do well. Where DeSantis has the proven track record of a good administrator and one who is not afraid to make controversial decisions when needed, and he appears to carry less baggage. Yeah, he's been vetted. If there's anything to come out again about Ron DeSantis, it was going to come out during the presidential campaign. Reagan says, I'd rather Ron DeSantis become a senator after his final term as governor of Florida. He's more useful in those types of positions. I tend to agree with that as well. There are a few people who said someone else. Robert said a professional. H.R. McMaster comes to mind. Perhaps we should ask Jack Keane his thoughts. I got to hear Jack Keane speak at the Washington Policy Center dinner this year. He's a smart man. I know that he has given his thoughts on what we're looking for in a SecDef. I trusted both McMaster and Keene with my life, and I still do. All right. Yeah, good thoughts. I think I'd like to see what happens with Pete. I don't like Jason Rantz, our friend Jason Rantz. He's on Fox News all the time. He's done a lot of segments in person and otherwise with Pete Hegseth, and he's been talking on social media about how, like, there's this accusation that Pete will always come to set drunk. And Jason's like, I've done so many segments with him. Like, you don't think I would notice if he was coming to set drunk. And so it's just all these interesting things. God only knows what would come out about me. She's such a diva. She's such a perfectionist. What else, Nicole?
I don't know, but you would, I think that if any of that came out about you, people would be, you would take it as, okay.
Yeah, I'd be like, so? Yeah.
I'm a little bit of a diva. Okay.
Am I a diva? In what sense? In what sense?
I don't think it's a derogatory term.
I work very hard.
I mean, that's just comparing you to Mariah Carey. What's wrong with that?
That's true. What sense am I a diva? I like things a certain way.
I think it's confidence and...
Confidence makes you a diva?
In addition to. So I think it's a whole bunch of things. So it's a confidence, an expectation aspect.
My expectations are high.
And
yes, correct.
And just and a drive. I think that, see, I don't think it's a bad thing. Now, I think that where people take it bad, not from you specifically, but other divas, is they become unapproachable, and you don't have that yet.
I've been told women find me unapproachable.
Oh yeah, I guess I could see that, but I don't think you actually are.
I'm just a shit person today.
No. I see where that maybe gives off that sense that you're unapproachable when you're all of those other things, but you are not unapproachable. I think that for the most part,
I'm a nice lady.
That's a bad assumption.
I'm a nice lady. I just don't want to make new friends. That's honest. I'm a nice person. I don't want to make new friends. Well, I'm 36. I have enough friends.
So you can have a lot of friends and you don't have to hang out with them all the time, right? So I think there's a difference in, like, I would say a lot of friends.
You do.
However,
you
do I hang out with all of them all the time? No. Do I check in? Maybe yes. I don't know. There's a lot of people that would consider me a friend that I don't see on a regular basis,
like,
or
if
even
I see you,
a couple times a year.
If I see you, I'm going to enjoy it. But, like, I'm not the person making phone calls every night.
Sure.
How do we get off track? Anyway, yeah. If I ever did something, I'm a diva. I'm a horrible person.
But anyway, I would say that you just would take those things and be like, okay.
Okay, moving on.
About drinking, I'm sure he would say, yeah, I have fun with my friends.
Yeah.
Okay, well, see ya. Yeah. But I don't show up to work drunk.
Yeah, prove it. Done. That's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. All right. So we talked on the show yesterday. I was surprised how many of you sent us messages telling your stories, because it came up yesterday about this idea of people are just staying put. Like, they're staying put in their homes or staying put in their apartments because, you know, moving on is not an option for them. Nicole was sharing the story of her parents. Like, they have a pretty big property, but they'd like to downsize a little bit, but even with a good nest egg in their home, they are like, they would get something smaller for the same price and they wouldn't come away with all this money. And so it's an interesting position. It's an unfortunate position that a lot of people who are nearing retirement are dealing with. So we talked to Zach Abraham with Bulwark Capital every week, and I wanted to talk to him since he deals with people's retirement portfolios and setting them up for the retirement they want. I asked him if he had some thoughts on that.
It wasn't that long ago where if you had a modest amount set aside for retirement, and between that and Social Security and a paid off house, you're good to go.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you're pretty much good to go. That is most likely in most cases not the situation today. Due to the decisions that we have made as a country over the last 50 to 60 years, I think Trump's going to make things better economically, but I think persistently higher inflation is going to be with us much longer than we'd like. And that is a pernicious problem because, you know, you got these people that have, you know, 80% equity in their house, but even if they go sell it, and let's say they only finance 25% of the next house, when you look at interest rates, their mortgage payment doubles.
Yeah.
Right. So are there ways to deal with that? Yes. Right. There are things. So what I would say to people like that is, I would say, look, if you think it's that simple, come talk to me or us or somebody else that does this, because you've got other options. You know, there are other people like, what do you mean? Look, it really depends on who you are, what you own, what your individual situation is. But there's a lot of times there's things that we can do to offset some of that interest rate risk or help diminish some of that interest cost. But at the end of the day, I think it's a really good lesson for people to realize that, hey, we got to start stacking more away. Because things aren't going to get less expensive. And if you're looking for a return back to, you know, 2015 normalcy or whatever, like, that ship has sailed.
Yeah. You answered the question I was going to ask, which is for those people who thought, I have this awesome nest egg in my home and I'm going to be able to cash in on that, and that's going to help with my retirement. And now they're looking at it and saying, well, that might not be the financial windfall I thought it was going to be because of the cost of leaving. So that's like, that hits you hard. I can't even imagine that being your plan and having that plan go out the window. And you're saying not too late to recover from that situation.
No, and there's other things. Look, you got to think creatively. For instance, you know, one of the things we talk to our clients about, and don't have a lot of them that take advantage of it, but another one is, and I'm going to say the word here, and I need people to keep an open mind, reverse mortgages. Okay, reverse mortgages have changed incredibly and are effectively money giveaways. Okay. And when I am saying that, I'm not saying it because I'm trying to get you to call me. We don't even sell reverse mortgages.
Okay. I was going to say,
could, but we don't, because we know people that do and they specialize in it and we handle what we handle. Right. So I'm not advocating, but there's all kinds of things that can be done. So if you find yourself in that situation, right, like we were specifically saying, hey, we've saved up, we've got our house nearly paid off or paid off, but we can't afford to move to buy somewhere else. Come talk to people, because, you know, come talk to me or somebody else, because there are things that you can do, and you're probably not nearly as stuck as you thought. There are other creative things that you can look at. But bottom line is, the more money you have, the easier it makes things, right? And so we got to do something that isn't the most comfortable thing to do. It's something that I do too, right? Which is live on a fraction of your income and stock it away, pay off debt, all those kinds of things. But if you still find yourself in those situations, don't just sit there and, you know, with your hands folded and just think you're stuck. There are options and other things to look at that may be great solutions for you.
Yeah, and part of that might be just getting a second opinion. And Zach and his team at Bulwark Capital are happy to give you a second opinion, no obligation at all. Just take a look, because they specialize in managing risk. And, you know, as you talked about there, it's also about looking at, you know, the retirement you planned for, given the cost of things now, how can you achieve it in the time that you've got left to save your working career and all that. So sign up for his free portfolio review at knowyourriskradio.com, knowyourriskradio.com. He'd be happy to give you a second opinion. All right, let's get to some comments, shall we? All right. Just this, on Amazon, Andrew Reed says, our state is outstanding in taxation without representation, just money grabs without common sense ideas. And what's interesting is then, remember, Democrats got rid of the advisory votes. So, like, they want to tax, you know, but they don't even want your opinion on whether you like their new taxes. All those were is just you weighing in on yes or no. And they got so mad because everybody would say, no, we don't like that tax. No, we don't like that tax. So they just got rid of the advisory votes. They don't even want your opinion on it. However, you do have taxation with representation. We sent these people there. I mean, voters sent these people to Olympia to do these things. If they didn't like it, they would be able to vote for someone else. Yet they choose to not do that. So it's hard to necessarily feel bad. Lieutenant Dan 457, Amazon does deserve to be vilified for its bad employee exploitation and crushing unionization, though I agree it does face unfair biased criticism and the good it does is ignored. What employees are they exploiting? Am I missing something?
Well, I think there's been a lot of stories about that.
Oh, like the employees who had to pee in a jar in the Amazon warehouses?
Yeah, and they're, you know, overworking, that type of thing.
I do know they like pay for people's college educations, and don't they like pay $20 an hour starting in their warehouses or $22 an hour or something like that? But again, not communist China. It's not North Korean labor camps. You can go work somewhere else. So I don't know. The Reaper's Son, Amazon needs to start selling affordable home kits just like Sears used to do back in the day. You can get all the materials sent to your location. They do.
Yeah, they
do. Go to Amazon and type tiny home. They sell on Amazon tiny home kits. I won't, because I've looked. You can get like a cool looking tiny home for like 20 to 30 grand.
Oh, yeah.
And they're like sweet, you know, and I don't know. I mean, I just see the picture on the Amazon website, but they look pretty cool. You just got to build it yourself.
And Amazon, I'm not sure, carries them, but there is a home kit thing. My cousins have building a house from a kit right now. They take care of all the permits, everything. I mean, it's a giant, very normal size house, not tiny, very giant house. And you can order a house in a kit. That's a 100%. Thing. And it's very efficient because it gets done faster because they have everything taken care of permit wise and everything. Yeah.
You know, I was just thinking about your parents. Cool. They can take they got their RV still, right?
Sort of.
Oh, I was saying they can come working out great to Mike and I's right property, now, but... just park their RV. Just tell them out there. Come on, we're welcome there anytime. There That's go. A solution. all right, on state-funded media, Robert Parr says three journalists for $2.4 million. That's very pricey. No, there's more fellows that are funded with that $2.4 million, but only three of them are going to Olympia to cover the legislative session.
By the way, my mom would not be happy about having Christmas and an RV on your property away over there. Like, she has to have enough space for Christmas dinner.
Okay, so she needs a house. The RV life isn't for them. But you can cook Christmas dinner.
Not in my house, though. I need it's the hosting thing.
Hosting thing,
right,
yes.
Anyway, go ahead.
That's what Airbnbs are for. My family did a family Thanksgiving 2 years ago at an Airbnb. It's a good idea. It was awesome. Yeah, it was great. All right, on education, Sandy W. I used to be a math teacher, eighth grade, in the late 1980s. It is not the focus on other things. It is the ridiculous curriculum that is being forced on these teachers. I moved out of teaching for other reasons, but as the curriculum changed over the decades, there was no way I would ever look at moving back into the classroom. Yeah, I remember when they went to Common Core, and there was this great video that showed, like, somebody solving a math equation based on, like, how we used to learn, and then Common Core, and it was insane.
Oh, it's like a page full of work. It's ridiculous.
Oh, absolutely nuts. Absolutely nuts. KBG on Ketanji Brown Jackson's weird comparison. Krista says it's entirely playing to the agenda of the loudest screamers in the room with absolutely no proof to back it up. Yep. This whole idea that, like, you absolutely need to let kids transition their gender, just stupid. Mama Pillow, these people who undergo transition are sentenced to a lifetime of at least monthly doctor appointments. Oh, we've had a detransitioner on the show. Mm-hmm. And what they went through medically and as a result emotionally was horrific. And when they decided to, thankfully, made the decision young enough and hadn't made any surgical interventions, it was just, I think it was testosterone or something like that, you know, was able to undo without really any long-term lasting damage because they woke up quick enough. But God, I just think about these kids. And look, if you make the decision as an adult, I always feel the need to reinforce that. I genuinely do not care what you do with your life as an adult, as long as it's not being thrust upon me, as long as I'm not forced to acquiesce to the idea that you're a biological woman or that you're a cat or whatever it is, then that's fine. You do you in the privacy of your own home and if you're not bugging people out in the public.
I think there should be a mandate for some sort of therapy before you let a child make any decision like this.
Right, and that's what the whistleblower at MultiCare fought for is, you know, she was a therapist and she was just being expected to sign off on sending kids to the gender clinic.
No actual therapy.
Without any... You had kids coming to her with all different levels of trauma that could obviously be contributing to this notion of this gender dysphoria. And it was like, no, don't look into any of that. Ignore that. Like, mom committed bestiality. Ignore that.
Yeah.
Like, mom would watch porn in the house. Ignore that. No, just send them to the gender clinic so they can
she
get something
porn on
cut
her
off.
Phone as a, what was she, eight?
Yeah.
And she had porn on her phone?
I think she was like 11 or 14. I can't remember. Like, there's a couple kids we cover. But anyway, it's just wild stuff. Good comments per the usual. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. All right, we talked on the show yesterday about some of these blue cities waking up. LA waking up. New DA down there going to be tough on crime. New York Mayor Eric Adams waking up. You know who else is waking up? The people of Chicago.
Okay, so I got a great way how we can what we can do with this budget. First, let's start with cutting off illegals, getting free everything. Free housing, free schooling, free food. Yeah, let's start with that. That'll save us a lot of money. What, $600 million? Let's start there. Then let's start with you, your salary. You are going down in history as the worst mayor in America. Let's start with cutting yours. You making too much money. Let's start there. And now let's start with the police detail you had, the 200 police detail you had. Let's start with that. Because you Democrats and you, remember you told us to defund the police? Remember you ran on that. Remember you was the defund the police? Let's start with that. Let's defund the police detail that you have. And let's put the police back in our neighborhood because we're not for defunding the police. We need the police. So let's start with all the Democrats because y'all policy, what y'all push in our neighborhood, defund the police. So all y'all that got police details and got police presence around y'all house, let's start with cutting that. That'll save a lot of the money. So, won't you just practice what you preach? Whatever property tax hike he's proposing, or whatever taxes he's proposing on the Chicago citizens, I'm letting y'all know for real. And now, if you all vote on anything to raise all taxes or anything, because we are already suffering homeowners, you all will not be in those seats.
Love it. Gotta love it. Add Chicago to the list. That has been your sanity check for today. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. We sure would love to have you as a subscriber to the show. You can sign up for just $5 a month by going to undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. Subscribers, we'll see you on Sunday for this week's edition of Sundays with Subscribers. The rest of you, we'll see you on Monday.